It's Victor Perton, that optimism man, and welcome back to the Optimism Man podcast. And today we're welcoming back an old friend with whom we had conversations in the Optimism Cafe at the Centre for Optimism. And he is the author of an absolutely fascinating book and the global leader in the concept, The Art of Compassionate Business. Dr. Bruno Cignacco, welcome back to the Centre for Optimism and to our podcast. Bruno, welcome back.
Thank you, Victor, for this invite. I feel very honoured to be here. Thank you.
Well, Bruno, you know that whenever you join me and the Centre for Optimism, our first question is always, what makes you optimistic? Is it your life experience? Is it faith? Is it people? Is it your research?
Yes, I can say that my research made me very optimistic because according to my latest research, I can observe that there is a chance for hope, especially in the business environment. We see many bad examples of companies that are acting in a very negative way, companies that are manipulating employees, manipulating customers, for example, polluting the environment, betraying suppliers. But I see a new generation of companies that are much more compassionate. They are much more human-oriented. And this gives me a lot of hope because I see that these companies are betting on the employees' development and growth. These companies are betting on the better future. They have a sustainable approach, which means that they are caring not only for their profit, but also they are caring for the environment. They are caring for the communities. They want to live a better world for future generations. And this fill me with a lot of hope and optimism. And I feel that this is a very important reason to start the day.
And I love the way that you infect us with that love of compassionate business and that notion of, you know, not just feeling good about your workers and making them feel good, but the stakeholders and the customers and the general public in your community. So look, not all of our listeners know you. So would you like to share with our listeners a bit of your life story and how you came to be so passionate about the art of compassionate business?
Thank you very much. This is a very insightful question. And I want to say that at the beginning, I was working many decades ago. I was working as an accountant, traditional accountant, doing the thing that accountants do, for example, taxes, auditing, projecting costs. But then I turned into a consultant in international marketing that I have been doing for many decades. And this was much more interesting because it got me in contact with other cultures, other cultural environment, international clients. Also, I was developing what we call international market strategies. I also was negotiating deals with international buyers and also adapting the products according to different cultural environments. I'm still doing this for nearly 30 years now, but then in the last few years, let's say 5 or 6 years, I turned into a new business set of activities that imply not only developing a strategy, not only developing tactics for companies to become much more efficient and effective and more competitive, but also companies that can build strong, long-lasting relationship with different stakeholders. And I came to this realization because I read an article, a very interesting article in Harvard Business Review that is titled The Human Moments at Work. And in this article, the author wasn't talking about strategy, wasn't talking about tactics, wasn't talking about, for example, how to promote a product, how to develop new items, but they were talking about building robust relationship with stakeholders. And for example, paying attention to what the stakeholders say, active listening, caring for them, support them when they face difficulties. And what I observed that this made a lot of sense. And I started dwelling into this type of research, and I found a lot of example of companies that are acting in a human-oriented way, companies that are also successful from the economic perspective. These are not only companies that are being kind to stakeholders, but companies that have very good key performance indicators such as profitability, productivity, efficiency, and others. But also these companies have a very good reputation. The reputation is not only given by their product or services, but is given by this strong relationship with stakeholders. These companies bring about a positive cycle of reciprocity. They care for stakeholders, and these stakeholders care for the companies in return. What I observe is that these type of companies are in increasing number. So there, this new category of companies, what we call human-oriented companies or compassionate companies, are setting the trend, the new trend in the business environment. The old-fashioned way of doing business that is only profit-oriented is a bit outdated, obsolete. And I started researching into this, and then obviously I found a lot of study, a lot of example, and I wrote my first edition of the book, The Art of Compassionate Business, that was published before COVID. And then recently I published the second edition that is augmented and corrected about this book, that is The Art of Compassionate Business, second edition. And I found that this model makes a lot of sense, because what is the core principle of all this research? The core principle is that the most important resource in business is not artificial intelligence, is not technology, is not information, is not any other resource like funds, but it's the human being. The human being is a meta resource. It's a resource that helps companies generate other resources. Without the human being, there wouldn't be any business model. There wouldn't be new products, new services. There wouldn't be artificial intelligence. There wouldn't be, for example, new advertising, because this is come from the human mind. So, and I feel that it's a resource that is irreplaceable. It's a resource that is paramount. And it's a resource that need to be taken care of. This resource is not, like many companies believe, a robot or automaton that work on its own. No, need to be cared for, they need to be nourished, the relationship with these stakeholders need to be nourished. And this is the most important factor, the most important commonality that I found in these companies that are the new generation of companies, companies that are human-oriented. They care not only for profit. Profits are very important for business survival, but they understand that this profit comes from positive relationship with these stakeholders, robust relationship with the stakeholder, and these companies try to nurture this relationship with this stakeholder. How? By satisfying each other's needs. This means mutually beneficial relationship with this stakeholder. This means long-term relationship with this stakeholder. These companies, according to what I observe, they do not focus on a transactional approach, one-off interaction. They try to build sustainable, long-lasting relationship with the stakeholders. And now, to finalize my story, and now we are training companies on these type of topics. For example, we are training companies on how to build a psychologically safe workplace, but also how to, for example, have much more mindful communication with different stakeholders, or how to develop much more compassionate customer service. In some cases, I observe some example of companies that are treating customer as, I don't want to say a four-letter word, but they're treating as this customer were only figures in the database that will lead the company to profit. But this customer, as any other stakeholder, are human beings with legitimate need that need to be recognized and acknowledged and satisfied whenever possible.
It's fascinating. I love the way you put, you know, that human moment. And you can feel it. You know, last night I went to a restaurant. You know, the moment I walked in, you know, the manager, the staff, there was just this ethos of service. You know, I could say, what is your favorite dish? And the manager could tell me almost instinctively that we shared the same love of the same dish. So you can feel it. So as you're doing this work, so as you know, my passion is optimism, and you know, compassion is so much a part of it. Do people come to this instinctively or accidentally, or can you train people to be compassionate leaders and compassionate followers and compassionate salespeople and compassionate procurement and the like managers?
Very interesting. Let's first define compassion. What is compassion about? Compassion is understanding how people think, but also how people feel. I try to connect them in a non-judgmental way, but also try to support them when possible. This is the definition of compassion. According to some research, compassion is related to love, love from the humanistic perspective. It means the love for humanity, love for people that are not only in your close circle, but people that could be a stranger, a neighbor, acquaintance. So, and this can apply to business. So love from the broader perspective include compassion, empathy, support, care, generosity. And in the case of compassion, people, according to my research, is naturally compassion. It's something that they have to remember how to become compassion, because in practice, what you have to understand that there are many hindrances in the business environment that prevent people from being compassionate. What are these hindrances? According to research, there is a very interesting research study that observed that, for example, when people are in a rush, when they have very important time limitation, they're less likely to be compassionate. Why? Because they give a priority to other activities. They might pass by a stranger that need your help, and they don't support them. But if they don't have a time rush, these people are likely to act in a compassionate way. So compassion is also related to kindness. And there are many studies that observe that even children can, or small babies can behave in a kind way when in a very interesting experiment. So what are the limitations in the business environment, in the work environment, that prevent people from being compassionate? Time limitation is one of them. In some cases, a strict abidance to rules. In some cases, some rules are important to establish order and certainty in the workplace and in the business environment. We don't want to get rid of all the rules, but some rules are a bit bureaucratic and impede this meaningful communication with people. In some cases, you are in a meeting and you have to be in that meeting until the end of that meeting, and maybe someone is feeling not so well, and you cannot help them because you have to stay at the meeting. Some rules are a bit meaningless, and I always advise company to review this rule on a regular basis. Are these rules adding value to all stakeholders, or are they preventing us to developing a long-lasting, meaningful communication and relationship with stakeholders? But also, a very important point is that multitasking, multiple projects that are simultaneously. People are stressed. When you're stressed, you tend to adopt a fight mode that implies that you are fearful. And this means that you tend to respond to a threat, and you tend to activate your system that is the reactive system. And in that case, how can you be compassionate? You are focusing on the threat. You're focusing on a threatening factor, and this implies that you are more prone to defend yourself instead of connecting. When people are in this reactive mode, they are more prone to be constricted. They tend to not to connect. They tend not to expand. They tend not to trust others. Instead, they get defensive. So this is another point. And also, lack of meaningful communication at work. What I observe also that in the work environment, many people tend to talk about only business topics. This means that we have to talk about budget, plans, project, business plans, business model. But in practice, we do not talk about other topics that are important. For example, there might be someone that is about to get a divorce or might have some health problem. And people cannot get the time. In some cases, it takes only 1 minute to have a compassionate conversation. Doesn't have the time. People don't have the time to get in a meaningful conversation with a different stakeholder, for example, colleague at work or a company customer. And in practice, this prevents people from becoming compassionate. So there are many hindrances that should be addressed. A very important hindrance in business is fear. Fear is a very important factor in business. Many people are, for example, in the workplace, are fearful of being fired, or fearful of making mistakes, or fearful of rocking the boat, means developing, for example, new ideas or proposing new projects. So when you are fearful, you cannot be compassionate. This is incompatible. Why? Because you are activating parts of your nervous system that are incongruent. So the idea is that we have to be more aware. So broadening our awareness is a very important point in becoming compassionate, and implies that you have to be aware that we are all human beings with similar needs. We have similar expectation about the future. We want good things to happen, negative thing not to happen, but also we have past experiences that are negative, past experiences that are positive. In practice, we all face challenges to different extents. And in practice, we might face challenges and we would like to be supported. So by understanding our common humanity, that is a very important factor in compassion, you are more prone to support others because you understand that you would like to be supported when you face challenges too.
I opened an all-staff conference last Wednesday, and we opened up by going around the room, asking everyone what has brought you joy this year and what makes you optimistic and positive for 2025. And we sort of said to them, you know, take a minute. Well, of course, as it went around the room, the minute stretched to 2 minutes, and we learnt so much about each other. What brings joy? What brings optimism? And, you know, I made it clear that it wasn't just the workplace. And today I asked one of the bosses in an all-staff conference online, what brings you joy? What makes you optimistic? And he shared his love of his daughters. And so we learnt a lot about him. And my friend John Hagel wrote a book couple of years now ago called The Journey Beyond Fear. And the first pillar of the journey beyond fear is curiosity and the love of exploration. So I often say to people, a fast meeting is not a good meeting. You can't explore. You can't ask the right questions. So if you think about that old song, slow down, you move too fast. You've got to make the morning last. Am I right? Is a quick meeting, a fast meeting, something that impedes our ability to have compassion, to have curiosity, and to explore the minds of the people with us?
Yes, it's true, because most of the business environment do not have a slow pace. On the contrary, they have a very fast pace. They need to be effective. They need to be competitive. They need to be productive. And by focusing on these values that are important, they forget about the human being. In some cases, people have different paces, and we have to understand these differences. But in practice, what I observe also that in some cases, the communication is very compartmentalized, means that you have the meeting 1 hour, and we can talk about this project, and that's it, and then we don't talk about this any longer. But in that meeting, there is an agenda. We have to talk about this point. Nothing else can be added. So a lot of structure. And in practice, in some cases, people need to go beyond the structure. Because I always tell my companies, the companies that I advise, that before being employees, employees were and are human beings. And they cannot leave their needs outside work. For example, their family needs or health needs or any other type of needs. Because in practice, they are in the back of their mind. They might not be able to concentrate. They might not be able to be effective. And so slowing down is a very good point. I observe a company here that is a very interesting, a bad example, that the company has 8 hours a day. This is the work day, typical work day for most employees. And these 8 hours a day, they have 8 meetings, approximately 1 hour each. How the employee can have time to relax, to chat to the colleagues about what happened last night or last week, or talk about their spare time, or talk about their hobbies. They cannot connect on a mental and emotional level. And what I observe, according to research, some companies that devote some part of their time to what we call social or playful activities, for example, meeting, for example, with all employees and all these the structure of the company, the hierarchy of the company, including top level, middle level, and bottom level, they meet, for example, to have dinner outside work, and people can talk to each other on a personal level. They let their hair down. They can connect in a much more social way. They don't talk about budget. They don't talk about problems, business problems, or issues to resolve. And when they come back to work, they come back revitalized. They come back much more energized. Why? Because people connected on a much more human level. And so, and they also, they tend to cooperate more, they tend to trust each other more. And this is fundamental because in practice, most of the things that are important in business cannot be measured precisely. It cannot be measured in a very quantitative way. For example, trust, cooperation. There are some, obviously, studies that try to get some figures on this, but cannot be measured as precisely as profit or market share or productivity. And I call this aspect that cannot be measured, I call qualitative aspect of business, but cannot be measured precisely, compassion, camaraderie, loyalty, trust, generosity, and others. And this impact positively on relationship. These are factors that contribute, for example, to the building of a psychologically safe workplace where employees can trust each other, can cooperate, can share resources, but also they feel at ease. They don't feel pressurized and they're less prone to be stressed. And they feel that what they do bring about a meaningful contribution to the company. So
So
it's
one of
true.
the things I tell people to do is to smile and say hello to everyone. You observe behavior in corridors and the like where people are looking at their phone or their iPad or reading and ignoring the people they're going past. So I always say, be a little bit louder. Say hello, good morning, or have a good day. In Australia, oftentimes the initial greeting is g'day, how are you? And the response is not bad or not too bad, to which there's
Yeah,
no
the same.
response. And so I train people, in fact, to change that question, to get rid of how are you and to replace it with something like, what's been the best thing in your day? And of course, it causes someone to stop and think and restore some of that balance. So are they some of the tools of a compassionate firm?
Yes. For example, you're talking about smiling. I mentioned two examples from research in the book that are, for example, in the restaurant sector, when waiters smile at customers, they are more likely, according to research, to receive a bigger tip. Why? Because they feel connected to this customer. This is only a smile, a very wide smile. But also in the hotel sector, accommodation sector, what we see is that some companies are trained to smile and to say hello to different guests and people around the hotel. And also this improve the relationship with customer is more likely to bring about positive customer satisfaction. This means that the review from customer tend to be more positive. Yeah, these are some examples, but other examples that you can bring about a much more compassionate attitude are, for example, being more generous and being more grateful. These are two important points that I mentioned in a full chapter in the book. And being more generous, when we think about most businesses are focusing on obtaining, receiving. I want more profit. I want more market share. I want more productivity, more sales. Obtaining, self-centered. I want my objective to be achieved. But generosity is the opposite, is focusing on others. How can we add value to others? And you can say, oh, but we add value to others. We were not benefiting from this. No, this doesn't make any sense. It might be counterintuitive for many listeners, but when you add value to others, you are also impacting yourself in a positive way because in business, everything is interdependent. You cannot succeed without the support of customers, without the support of employees, without the support of, for example, suppliers or community members. Wouldn't it be nice to have all these stakeholders on our side so that they contribute spontaneously with our company? So this means that according to research, when people are generous, for example, workers are generous with other colleagues or employees are generous with customers, they tend to bring about a positive cycle of generosity. So generosity begets more generosity. When you treat people and you adopt a positive attitude, a generous attitude, try to provide them with some value, for example, tangible things, an employee that, for example, work hard, the employee can receive a bonus. This is a tangible thing. But in some cases, the most important thing to give and to give to others is, for example, intangible things. If an employee is feeling a bit unease, so this employee can be, for example, listened to. You are giving an ear. Or, for example, you are giving some advice to this employee. Or you're giving the opportunity to work flexible time if they have some family problems. So in some cases, this tangible and intangible thing bring about a very important value. And what I was saying that generosity bring about a positive cycle of reciprocity. When you give things to others, tangible or intangible, according to research, they tend to feel indebted with you. They tend to be feel compelled to give you back. So, for example, in the case of the restaurant, if you have been treated as a customer in that restaurant in a very compassionate way and in a generous way, they were very supportive and very caring, very obliging, you are more prone to leave positive reviews. You feel compelled to give back. Instead, if you have been treated in the opposite way, in a non-compassionate way, in a dismissive way, in an uncaring way, what the company will expect? That you will treat them in a positive way? No, you are more prone to leave negative reviews. So when, for example, in the case of customers, when companies try to exceed customer expectation, means that they give more than this customer expect, what we call delighting customer. These customers are more prone, according to research, to become loyal and committed to the company. Instead, when you try only to meet or just about meeting customer expectation, any company can do this. So this means that I want listeners to think about how important it is to be generous. This means, what can I give to this stakeholder? How can I add value to them? How can I improve their life? How can I make them feel positive emotion? And the other point is gratitude. Gratitude is so important because many people take the contribution of others for granted. How many companies I have seen that these companies were dismissing employees' contribution? Employees were working hard, in some cases not seeing their families so much. And what happened? This company took this for granted because they are paying a salary. But I always mention when we train companies that the employees have different type of needs. They don't have only an economic need to get a good salary. This is very important for their survival, feeling their basic expectation, but also they have emotional needs. They want to feel that they count. They want to feel that they are taken care of. They want to feel that they're making a meaningful contribution to this company. And many companies take this for granted. In some cases, the employee leaves the company with a good salary because they feel that they were not taken care of, they were not cared by this company, and they look for another company, maybe with a lower salary, but they will feel much more supported, much more recognized. For this reason, it's so important to have a program of employee recognition. How can we recognize, how can we acknowledge this employee contribution, for example, in a public way? When you praise people, try to do this as public as possible. Maybe there could be an event, maybe there could be a newsletter when employee can see their picture and they can say, oh, this employee contributed to this important project. People want to be taken care of. People want to be this relationship need to be nourished on a regular basis. Relationships, there is a little metaphor that many authors use, is like a plant, need to be watered on a regular basis. If not, this plant will wither. So in practice, recognition, which is related to gratitude or thankfulness, and also the aspect of generosity are two very important pillars to bring about a much more compassionate attitude.
Yeah. I always, any cafe or restaurant I go to, almost inevitably I stop. If they've cooked, I put my head in the kitchen and say thank you for the food. And I stop at the
Very good.
barista. And, there's a restaurant near me. They treat me like royalty, and I don't do anything special other than as I'm leaving, I thank them. Now, for you've got the second edition now. So, what have you learned in between writing the first edition of this book and this second edition? What you've learned, what's different, what's better?
Yes, the second edition is augmented, include hundreds of cases of compassionate companies that the first edition didn't include. But also, I develop different insights on, for example, some important topic like trust. So the importance of trust in business. Trust is what we call is in, an intangible, but bring about a lot of value. What I observe that in some cases, very simple gesture can bring about more trust in the workplace or in the business environment. For example, according to research, when you ask people, when you see them that you are not feeling so well, they are a bit down, they feel a bit despondent or a bit depressed, you ask them, you check out with them. You say, is anything okay with you? Are you feeling a bit sad? You asking this specific moments, the moments that are very challenging for them, and this tend to bring about stronger relationships with this stakeholder and tend to bring about more trust. But also, when you focus, according to research, on agreement that are win-win, where all parties win, nobody wins at the expense of others. For example, you bring about an agreement where the customer wins, the environment wins, for example, environmentally friendly products, but also the company wins. In this case, you tend to bring about more trust in the company. And trust is very related to reputation. When a company is acting in a trustworthy way, this company tends to bring about a better brand image and better reputation. And there is a lot of research on reputation. When you bring about a higher reputation, you tend to attract higher quality investors. You tend to bring about also attract more talented people. These people tend to stay longer in your company, but also the customer tend to be more loyal to your company. What I observe also in between the first edition and the second edition is that there was a very important phenomenon that we all know that nobody's talking about now, that is the COVID. And what I observed during the COVID in the middle, that also I mentioned a few examples in the book, that during the COVID, you have a very clear-cut differentiation between the two categories of companies. I give you an example. So some companies during COVID, especially in sectors that were very challenged, for example, the accommodation sector, airline sector, and others, the restaurant sector, they were firing people. And this is a very bad situation for most companies, but it's how you approach this challenge. So what I observed when they were cutting down their personnel, there were two categories of company very clearly differentiated. The first category of companies that were merciless, non-compassionate. They were firing, in some cases, without even paying a penny, no compensation, employees were stranded with no economic support, and also very short notice, so employees couldn't plan at all. This was the first type of companies, and this type of companies, what I consider, they were considering employees as costs, not as human beings. So we have financial problem, we cut costs. And these employees, well, are the first cost that we have to cut. This company forgot the meaningful contribution of these employees in the past. So these companies, obviously, they were obviously breaking up this relationship with these employees. The second type of companies, in some cases, they have to fire employees, but I observed a few cases here in the UK that were very compassionate. And how this happened? Well, the company couldn't avoid firing people, but they were preparing these employees to look for any job opportunities outside the company. For example, this company were referring these employees to their competitors. They were training employees to how to develop better CVs, how to, for example, engage in an interview in a much more meaningful way, a job interview. These companies were supportive. Even they couldn't avoid the dismissal of these employees, they were supportive. And in some cases, when this company came back from the pandemic and they were more obviously profitable and more sustainable, many of these employees came back to this company. The first case, the first example of company non-compassion, obviously this first category of company have a lot of problem to get employees back, especially in the airline sector. I don't want to mention any company, but in the airline sector, they have a lot of problem to get air hostesses, pilots. Why? Because they were dismissed mercilessly, like a very low quality resource. And as we mentioned, the employees and any other stakeholder, customers, supplier, are the most important resource. So this is a very interesting insight. And what I observed that there is a very clear separation between these two categories. This is much more clear. And in some cases, companies do not realize that when you are only focused on profits, in some cases, you want to obtain profit by all means. Exploiting employees, polluting the environment, manipulating customers, deceiving the community. And this is backfiring because at the end, we are in an age of transparency and also social media platform all over the place and many media platforms. Anything that the company do that is potentially unethical will be in the news sooner or later, because most of the news platform are sensationalistic. This means that they like to show these type of cases, the negative cases, because human beings have a bias toward the negative, and they like to pay attention to this type of negative cases. So instead, what I was saying that the second type of companies are much more human-oriented, and these companies try to bring about a balance between these quantitative aspect of business, profit, market share, reducing costs, and so on, and qualitative aspect of business, empathy, support, care, generosity, gratitude.
So can I take you to the general? So if we look at the English-speaking countries, and the bigger ones, the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, there seems to be a diminution in trust. Less trust in government, less trust in government institutions, less trust in most corporations, less trust in NGOs. So what's happening? Is there a relationship with companies showing less compassion? Is there less compassion? I know there's some American studies that show that empathy is diminishing generation by generation. So what's going on, and how can we reverse that trend?
There are many factors, like a multi-causal phenomenon, but what can I say is that in practice you have the media highlighting in many cases the negative. So there might be many examples of positive, but we don't see so much. There are very few publications in numbers that talk about the positive things as compared with the publication that talk about the negative things. The negative news are very popular and people are grabbed by this negative news, so they try to show what sells. But in practice also you see also lots of scandals in business, in different sectors, for example, companies faking the accounting statement, or for example, betraying customers, or for example, polluting the environment. And this is also, I feel that people are very aware of this. They take these negative examples that might not be the majority, and they take this as a how all companies behave in general. But also, in some cases, you have companies that are purposefully behaving in an unethical way. So this means that companies that know for sure that their action will bring about negative effect on the environment, for example, polluting the environment, but they go ahead all the same because they have this mentality of profit orientation only. So this means that they don't care about the different stakeholders, the environment, they are not sustainable. So this is a multi-causal phenomenon, but also what companies can do regarding this. Lack of trust in the business environment is very serious because bring about higher costs. For example, if you don't trust, for example, a business partner, you're more likely to write down a very detailed contract. This means higher legal costs. And you monitor this contract very closely. Why? So because you don't trust it. But also when people don't trust each other, according to research, they try to behave in a competitive way, not in a cooperative way. They tend to cooperate less. How companies can increase their trust? Well, a very simple approach is building a strong relationship with stakeholder will bring about more trust in that company. For example, there are different social media platforms such as Glassdoor that show you, for example, if the employee that worked for that company felt satisfied, felt supported by this company. This company was compassionate with this employee, or this company was exploited. So everything is transparent there. If, for example, the company is selling product that harm customers or they bring about negative effect on customer, this will be in the reviews. People can read the reviews. There are many review platforms that also can show. So this means that, and we saw negative reputation affect profit in a negative way, affect productivity, and affect also sales in a negative way because people don't want to buy from companies that are unethical, and people don't want to work for companies that are unethical. So in practice, building a strong relationship is a good start point, but also in some cases, some companies use certification. For example, ISO 19000, 19000, 14000, and other 18000. So you have different certifications that bring about some credibility. For example, ISOs are quality certification that company can obtain, and some of the certification also certify that the company is environmentally friendly. And also you have also some other certification like fair trade, for example, that the company can show the public that they are paying a very sound income to this supplier, or company that also certify their product as organic. This means that the company is environmentally friendly, but also providing customer with healthy product. When companies have this certification, what I always advise this company to show on their website so that they show that they're credible, they're differentiating from the rest, because most of the companies don't have this certification. What you are showing that you're responsible with the environment, you're responsible with customers, you're responsible with suppliers. Well, this is a company that is more likely to be trusted. But also companies that have very positive reviews, they're also a very important clue that the company is trying to exceed customer expectation. This means I always tell my clients that when you are serving customers, try to switch from what we call a selling mindset. This means try to sell product, get profit, more sales, to a serving attitude. This means an attitude of service. They try to serve. You try to add value to them. Mm-hmm. The most important thing is customer satisfaction. When the company bring about very important customer satisfaction and the customer is not only satisfied but delighted, this customer is more prone to spread the positive word on behalf of the company. This customer will become an ambassador, an unpaid ambassador for this company. And customers are more credible when leaving reviews than advertising, because advertising is paid. What they will highlight in the advert? Positive aspect. Instead, customer is tend to be much more objective. If they like the product, they leave positive reviews. If they don't like the product, so there are different factors that can contribute. There is not only one piece, it's like a puzzle, different pieces of the puzzle that can bring about more trust, but these are important aspects also. And taking into account that the company has a mission that is meaningful. So when someone read the company's mission, there should be some element that are economic aspects, but also social aspects. How the company being in this business environment want to bring about a positive impact on the world, and also positive environmental aspect. This should be embedded in the company's mission, because the company's mission is the super objective where all other business objectives are connected to.
As you say, to have that positive environment, that positive lesson. So as you know, my passion is optimism, just as your passion is compassion. So my impression is that the optimistic leader, the positive leader, is more likely to be able to develop those compassionate relationships. You know, the optimist who believes, you know, in mankind. The other day, I got my sixth reminder to go to a dental appointment. My dental practice has been taken over by one of the big insurance companies, Bupa. So I've gone from one little reminder, now I get five reminders, including one that tells me I'm going to pay $50 if I don't turn up. And I said to the manager, as I said, most people do the right thing most of the time. Why is your company that makes nearly $1 billion in profit a year need to be threatening me with a $50 fine in order to do the right thing? So do you see that strong relationship between optimism, a belief in good things will happen, a belief in people, and a greater commitment to compassion?
Yes. I see a lot of links. For example, what we can see is that optimistic people can frame things in a positive way, and this can bring about better results in business. For example, we saw the example of the two companies that they have to fire people and they have no choice. But how the first company approach was very negative. This means that they have to fire with no compensation. The second company tried to frame this in a much more positive way. This means that they try to train people to get new job opportunities outside the company. They try to support these employees by referring this to other companies. So this means that how you frame things, if you frame things in a positive way, you tend to have more positive thoughts and more positive emotion. And according to research, when you experience positive emotion, you are more prone to build this strong relationship with different stakeholders and also to bring about much more creativity and innovation. Because when you feel positive emotion, you are more prone to be expanding your awareness, see other possibility. You are not feeling threatened. You are not feeling fearful. When you feel fearful, you are less likely to become creative or innovative. You tend to act as usual or by default, so on autopilot. Instead, when you feel positive emotion, what comes from also an optimistic attitude, you tend to see things as opportunities. The problems are not problems. There are chances to improve. What I observe that many leaders and many companies that people have this optimistic attitude, they tend to see everything in business as a learning opportunity. This means that they have a growth mindset. They see that they can always learn. This is a stepping stone, not a stumbling block, a stepping stone to new ways of doing things. And when you have some challenges and you frame them as opportunity, you are more likely to look for what we call innovative solution. I give you an example. Anyone would like to hear about Uber, and Uber is a very popular company. I'm sure that this company also there in your country, and Uber started with a very interesting challenge. These two entrepreneurs were coming from a conference. I mentioned this example in the book, and they didn't find a taxi. This was a cold night and late at night, and this was a negative situation. Seemingly negative situation, but they asked themselves a very important question that brought about this innovative business model. What if people can get a ride by clicking on their phone, on their mobile phone? So this means that the challenging situation, not finding a taxi, brought about not a state of conformity, because when people are negative, they are less likely to change, they are less likely to open their mind, but they brought about a very interesting business model. And now most of the people in the world, they are very aware of this company and the business model that disrupt the transport sector. So this means that when you're more optimistic, you're not only more hopeful, but you tend to broaden your awareness. You tend to see things as possibility, opportunities to improve. And you also adopt a learning attitude. This means that you can always learn. You do not believe that you know it all. You are always open to new insight from the environment, from your own experiences, from your other company's experiences. So this means that you are always willing to improve. This is connecting to what we call a beginner's mind and also a learning attitude or a growth mindset. Many companies, like, for example, Dell company, that is a very famous computer company, they are training people on growth mindset, because they know that in that sector that is very competitive, you can always see new opportunities for artificial intelligence, for circuit, for new computer design, and so on. So it's a very important soft skill. And being positive bring about hope also, because in some cases in the business environment, you have a lot of uncertainty. Something might fail. There is a lot of risk, because if not, everyone will be engaged in business. Very risky endeavor, always any business environment is risky. But in practice, when you have this optimistic attitude, you tend to see these challenges as temporary. You see these challenges as that can be surmountable, that you are capable of doing this and more. And also when you have some important challenges that affected your company in a seemingly negative way, you are more resilient, meaning that you can come back stronger with the knowledge, with experience. So I feel that this is a very important connection between what it is optimism and also compassion, because there are two important positive values that people should be continually reflecting on and putting this into practice.
I think that's brilliant. And also, particularly the point you make, that fear makes people conformist. And I mean, to strengthen what you've just said, the University of Sydney Business School published a study in October called The Optimism Effect. And looking at 25 years of OECD data, they've concluded that companies and countries that are more optimistic are more successful in investment formation, capital formation, and are more optimistic and more productive. So what do you think? I mean, I think it makes
I agree. Sense. I agree. I can give you a nice example here. There is a very famous entrepreneur here in the UK that is James Dyson. And James Dyson is very famous because of his resilience. When he developed a few decades ago the first vacuum cleaner, backless vacuum cleaner, he was a bit challenged. He got indebted to develop these prototypes. He developed thousands of prototypes because they were all failing. They were not perfect. They were not feasible. And for more than 4 years, he was developing prototype by prototype. And when he wasn't, until he got successful with the best prototype, and obviously this product caught up all over the world, and many companies started imitating this entrepreneur, and this became the rule. So before this entrepreneur, most of the vacuum cleaner were using bags, and now most of the vacuum cleaner you don't use bag, bagless vacuum cleaner. When he was interviewed, he asked, what made you go ahead continually? And he said that he was resilient and he was learning from each of these opportunities. They were not failures, but they were learning opportunities and they were giving him the chance to get better in the future. And so when you are optimistic and you have hope and you believe that you are likely to improve your things, and because everything in life and in business is a learning process, you are more prone to surmount these challenges, these difficulties. You are more prone to be focused on the objective. You are more prone not to give up, because it's very important. Persistent, you're more prone to be determined, to dwell on some value like greed, determination, persistence, resilience, and you're more prone to succeed in the future. Instead, when you are negative, when you think that a thing won't work well in the future, well, you are less likely to try. In some cases, why? Because you focus on what cannot work, what will fail. And in practice, business is always about risk. You never know for sure, even big companies, when they have a lot of people working in, for example, in the research department, developer department, they cannot know for sure if a product will succeed or not. But in many cases, the only way to gather insight or feedback is from practice, developing the product, testing the product in the marketplace, and then get an insight and improve, iteration, mean continually improving. Some company like Toyota and Honda, they are very famous because of the concept of TQM, Total Quality Management, which implies we're continually improving. We're good at this, but we can get better. Any insight, for example, from people working in the car manufacturing can be brought about, analyzed, dissected in order to see how can we improve this car production. So this means that continual improvement is key, because at the end, is in business, nothing is a sprint, it's a long marathon. So this means that you have some challenges, and also you can learn from these challenges, but this is not the end of the world. In practice, you can improve, you can get better, you can come back. It's about resilience, determination, passion, but also persistent, and focus on the main goal. What value we want to add to these stakeholders?
I love the Dyson example, because he says he had 5,000 iterations of the bagless vacuum cleaner before he achieved commercial success. Now, as you know, Bruno, the Center for Optimism, we've been working for 10 years on optimism and leadership, and we've finally synthesized our research down to one sentence, which says that optimism is the answer to life's most pressing questions. I think we could probably add something after this conversation, couldn't we? Optimism is the answer to life's most pressing questions, and compassion's the way of enlisting the workforce to get there.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And also, let's go back to a topic that we mentioned briefly, conformity. So many companies, when they're doing well, they tend to become much more relax, and they don't try to improve their activity. They don't try to improve their business model. They don't try to bring about better services. But companies that have an optimistic view tend to see this as a never-ending process and an ongoing learning process. This means that even when companies have very positive reviews, if the company adopts a very optimistic view, the company knows that they can get even better. They can go beyond this. They can provide with better product, better services. They can treat customers even in a better way. They try always to look opportunity for improvement, because optimism is, in my view, is very well connected to improvement, continual improvement. This means that you open your views, your awareness, but also you are more likely to add increasing value to stakeholders. This is quite important because creativity and innovation and research and development of new products implies lack of conformity. When you're acting, for example, by conformity, you are less likely to innovate. You are okay, you are at ease. But when you are, even when you are doing well in business and you feel that you can do even better, you can increase the value obtained by different stakeholders, you are more prone to bring about some endeavor that could be In some cases, risky, but could bring about some innovation that could bring about better product, better services. So, and also optimism, in my view, implies also opening up to much more positive question. I mentioned in the book the importance of acting in a very inquisitive manner. Research showed that when you are acting in an inquisitive manner, you are more prone to become much more innovative and creative. You look for different ways of developing business models, services, products. Children are naturally inquisitive, but when we grow up as adults, obviously we lose a bit this skill, but this is still with us. So when you're inquisitive, you ask questions, for example, how can we add better value to this stakeholder? How can we bring about a much more positive impact on the community? How can we satisfy customer in order to increase their satisfaction, their positive reviews? How can we differentiate our relationship from the relationship that are built by other competing companies? There is a very interesting research study that observed when two companies are offering the same type of product A and B are very similar. The differentiating factor is the relationship that connect the company with this customer. How can we increase this connection with the customer? How can we bring about much more rapport? How can we treat customer as they deserve to be treated, not only when we're selling the product, but also after sales? So how can we be more creative and inquisitive after selling the product when customer might have some doubts, some regrets, they need to be supported? I see some company that only support customer when they sell the product, but then they dismiss this customer. So this means that optimism implies a very positive value that bring about more research, and research and development of new product and business model always implies this iteration. This means that you try, test, and in some cases fail. Well, when you're optimistic, you can go ahead. You're more resilient. If you fail, let's say between quoting marks, you are more prone to continue trying and look for different approaches and look for different insights. I always tell companies that they can learn from any source. They can learn from very important business studies, like a research study validated by science, or they can learn from the comment from the janitor that is cleaning the bathroom. The insight can come from any source, and every insight should be considered in a very duly way because they can bring about a much more innovative way to do business. So this is briefly the connection between these two aspects.
Well, we're recording this not long before the new year, 2025. So looking ahead, Bruno, what excites you most about the future of compassionate business practices, and how are you going to spread them, and how can our listeners help to spread those ideas?
Well, what excites me more about the new year is that I can continue disseminating these ideas, and I see less resistance from companies. Believe it or not, there is a lot of resistance, for example, from companies that are acting in a very traditional way, companies that are only profit-oriented, companies that do not believe that being too kind and too nice will affect the work environment, the business environment. But what I observe is that, for example, when you provide in the training these companies with specific science, with evidence that this works, for example, I give you an example. Recently, I train a company and I talk about the importance of a psychologically workplace. And the company said, I think that is a kind of fluff. I say, listen, according to science, and then I can provide some example of company. According to science, when you have a psychologically safe workplace, which means that employees feel supported, they are treated in a compassionate way, employee can feel at ease, they're not feeling stressed, they can cooperate, they can be assisted by each other, and they can share resources and work jointly. According to research, this workplace have higher employee satisfaction, higher customer satisfaction, lower stress level, but also lower turnover and lower absenteeism, and this bring about positive profit. When I mentioned these studies, the company became much more open-minded, and what this gave me a bit of hope, because at the end, many people believe in scientifically based studies, and this is also a very important piece of evidence. But then when I mentioned some example of companies that are developing a psychologically safe workplace, these companies are more open to change their perspective, their paradigm, from a profit-oriented perspective to a much more human-oriented perspective, which include profit, people, and planet. So this means that training companies, but also giving talks and also continually researching on this topic, give me a lot of hope for next year, but also for the following years. And maybe we meet in 20 years, Victor, and maybe in 20 years, this will be a topic that all companies will be approaching this in a compassionate way. But it's probably very difficult to happen, but give me hope that I can see that an increasing number of companies are becoming much more compassionate, they're more human oriented, and also companies that are obviously highlighting not only the product that they offer to the marketplace and the services that they offer to the marketplace, but also how well they treat employees, how caring they are with the environment, how supportive they are with community, for example, through donation, volunteering. And this is giving me a lot of hope. I'm very optimistic about the future.
Well, as you know, our audience is mainly very optimistic people, and I'm pretty confident they're compassionate. So, what's the best way that they can follow your work over the next 20 years and to make sure that you and I are talking at least in 20 years, if not earlier? So, how can they follow your work best, and how can they support your work?
They can follow me on LinkedIn. They can find me on LinkedIn, Bruno Signaco with double C at the end, or they can check one of my website, www.brunosignaco.com. And they're interested in knowing more about this approach. They can also check the book, The Art of Compassionate Business, second edition, published by Routledge, and can be found any bookshop online and offline.
Fantastic. Well, Bruno, I love you. I love your work. I love this passion for compassion. So thank you so much. And on behalf of all of our listeners and friends, I wish you a very successful new year, 2025, and as you said, the next 20 to 25 years. I had a lovely note. I delivered a class recently on great public policy, and I used Henry Kissinger as the example, still working at 99. And one of the students wrote back to me a week later and she said, "I'm maintaining the joy, the laughter, and the optimism you told us we must have in the class." And she said, "And I hope you'll still be working at 99." So I think she was the perfect example of the
Thank you.
compassionate student, a good example of what both you and I are trying to foster. So, Bruno, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
So
Thank
much
you.
for your passion and so much for the great wisdom you've shared with us today.
Thank you very much, Victor. Nice to see you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bruno. If you'd like to follow Bruno, as he said, just follow his website or his LinkedIn, and very interesting work in his passion of compassion. And so too, Optimism, we'd love you to become a subscriber to the Centre for Optimism. So just Google Centre for Optimism and you can sign up for our updates there. And you can also follow me on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook, Victor Perton or Victor Perton, that optimism man. Best wishes for a wonderful, wonderful day ahead.